The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So in the last few weeks, three weeks now, I've been giving talks on having to do with speech, mindfulness of speaking. And I've tried, to some degree, to avoid the ethical issues around speech. Often when Buddhists will talk about speech, they often start with the ethical issues, what makes up right speech. And instead, I pointed out some of the various things we might be mindful of if we look at the domain of speaking. It's commonly said that, and I certainly feel that way, that one of the hardest places to stay mindful is in speech, while we're speaking. And so it's a very important area to bring mindfulness to if we want to bring mindfulness to our whole life. It's a very consequential issue, and that's why it's often treated ethically, because of the great harm and benefit that can come from speech. And the first week I talked a lot about what you can notice in yourself, physically, emotionally, kind of your own, if you bring mindfulness to yourself while you speak. The second week I talked a lot about bringing mindfulness to what motivates us to speak. That suggesting this is a very powerful window into our inner life, probably unparalleled. If you simply ask the question, why am I going to say what I'm about to say? If you stop and pay attention to that, you'll learn so much about yourself. And the last week I talked about being mindful, not so much of the ethical issues of how you should speak, but rather some of the dangers and benefits that can come with speaking. Kind of getting sensitive to the area, the territory of what happens in social relationships and what happens with speech, and what are the dangers and harm that we can see that gets created, and what's the benefits that we can see that gets created. Today is a day to talk about ethics. And I think what I'll do is divide it up into 2 days. Today is what to avoid, and next week more what to pick up, what to act on in terms of speech. And but in terms of talking about looking at the ethics of speech from a Buddhist point of view, just one thing that I've seen, I've heard said, is that not from Buddhism but from elsewhere, that many people give more attention, more care to how they dress than how they speak. And, you know, to state it like that, you know, what's more important? How you dress or what you say? People who study ethics, some of them like to say that there has to be a first principle from which then the rest of the ethical system builds. So some primary principle like, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. That's a first principle. So from there comes a lot of other things, follows from there. And so certainly Buddhism has first principle or first principles that can be used. And I'll talk about that. But it's also, there's another perspective on ethics from Buddhism. And that is not just first principle, but also, if we use that language or first, first state. The first state of being, that how you are, the state that you're in, can affect the choices you make about what is ethical and not ethical, how you want to act. So, for example, if you meditate and you find yourself relatively peaceful, settled, unagitated, not in conflict with things at the moment, and in that state of unconflicted peace, you probably feel how grating it would be to say something really mean-spirited. It just kind of would feel kind of really off. And so, but if you're really agitated and upset and angry, saying something mean-spirited can come out off your tongue with ease. Not only that, but there can be justification for it. Yes, that's right. You don't feel the cost, the pain of it. So how we behave in the world has something to do also with the state that we're in. And so it's not just a matter of first principles and logic and principles and how they build up and understand it. It has a lot to do with how we want to be, how we are. And that's why meditation practice is important, both as a way of establishing a way of being, how to be, that feels satisfying to us and deeply meaningful, but also so it provides us a reference point from which to choose more wisely how we want to engage in the world, how we want to speak, what we want to do in the world. And this, your state of being, state of consciousness you have, has a big impact on how you see relationship to other people, how you understand yourself, and how you understand what's important for you. So we say it's very important as a preparation for wise speech to do this inner work, to establish some sense of deep inner well-being. And then you have a very different reference point for the issue of ethics. From the point of view of first principle, Buddhist ethics has a variety of first principles that you could fall back on. So different people, different times, fall back on different ones. One, a very simple one, is to avoid causing harm to yourself. Just that, self-serving. Don't cause harm. And it's pretty easy to see with speech how a lie could come back and bite you later. Or mean-spirited speech can come back and bite you when someone returns in kind. Or it builds up a certain kind of deep, could create a kind of reservoir of potential regret. I've sat down to meditate, been quite happy and contented, and sitting there very peacefully, and then boom, the memory banks fire up. Oh, how could I have done that? Oh, I forgot about that. That was 20 years ago. What did I do? Oh no! So it's really amazing how the mind, the heart, how it unfolds and moves and resolves things that sometimes are unresolved from decades before. It has a chance to do that when we sit down and become still and quiet and peaceful. It can be a surprise. So the idea of just taking care of yourself would be a principle, would be a motivation for, let's be careful here with what we do and say, so that I don't cause any danger for myself here. The second principle that's sometimes used in Buddhism is compassion. What is it like for the other people? So the idea of minimizing harm for others. So rather than protecting yourself, you want to protect others. And that can be a good idea. It's said that the more you protect others, the more you're protected yourself. So there's a wonderful mutuality that goes on. But also that the desire, the motivation to protect others, to be compassionate, arises also out of this first state. The more relaxed a person is, the more at ease a person is, the more likely the inner functioning of empathy, compassion, is going to work. The more stressed we are, the less likely it's going to work. So again, compassion can be something that seems like a good idea. It can also be an issue of the heart. And so for people who are interested in compassion, it's also a matter of cultivating a greater capacity for empathy for the world around us. And so there are Buddhist practices for that. And coming from that compassion and a heightened understanding of compassion, heightened empathy, heightened understanding of how people are impacted, then comes different choices about how we want to speak. Now the third principle, first principle, could be seen as being kind of what's in it for oneself, but it's not about protecting oneself from danger, but rather about creating for oneself a maximum good. So some of you know about there was for a long time in psychotherapy, there was the idea of helping people who were psychologically troubled and helping them become normal, whatever that is, and so they can function and cope in society normally. And then there became a movement in psychology that it's not just about becoming, not just, we don't have just have the potential of becoming normal, let's all become normal, But rather, it's possible to become, to take it, to develop oneself and look at oneself beyond normalcy into higher states of well-being. So even people who don't have psychological difficulties or struggles, psychology might be helpful for these transpersonal realms, for example. So Buddhism also goes beyond becoming normal, becoming ordinary and just kind of coping in life in an ordinary good way, but also points to some possibility of maximum good, which it defines as awakening. It's often said that this awakening is not meant to be something selfish or self-serving only, but it's something that's also very, very helpful for the world around us, that the level of peace and happiness that can be attained through deep practice is something that by osmosis, by inspiration, by example, is very, very helpful for the world around us as well. So from the first principle, the idea of not causing any harm to yourself, Buddhism offers the five precepts as being really central, five lay precepts. And one of those has to do with speech. And that one simply says, avoid lying. That's all it says. Just shouldn't lie. It said, I've heard, that it's said that even, who is, I don't know who said it, but in the society of the devil, I guess the devil has a big court of devilines, I don't know. the one precept that they follow there is no lying. Because even that society wouldn't be able to function if people lied. Society depends on a certain degree of truth-telling for it to function well. And for people practicing mindfulness, not lying should be, at least the motivation not to lie, should be second nature. Because what mindfulness practice is truth-telling. It's being honest. Another word for mindfulness is to be honest. Sit down, close your eyes, and just honestly notice what's actually going on here. And human beings are amazingly effective at self-deception or self-delusion or self-misunderstanding of what's going on or having blinders on. And so part of the function of mindfulness is to become at a heightened degree of truth-telling for ourselves. Oh, this is what's really going on. This is what's really motivating me. This is what really is, you know, sort of feel here what's happening. So to lie goes directly counter to the very thing we're trying to cultivate through mindfulness meditation. So it's not something we want to do. Lying also can create a tremendous amount of problems for ourselves and for others. It can seem in the short term that lying can be beneficial. It gets us out of trouble. But then it can come back and bite us when someone finds out, or they find out people, you know, you can't be trusted because maybe your word is not good. Or people find out that you've lied and they feel deeply disappointed, deeply hurt. And so then we have to deal with those broken relationships that are there. Maybe it's better to say nothing than to lie. And then there's a whole exploration of lying. You know, are white lies okay? Are modified lies okay? You know, is it okay to lie when in certain kind of very, very extreme situations. People love to have extreme situations. What about when, you know, then? You know, that just proves that it's okay to lie. You know, if the Nazis come running in here, you know, then it's okay to lie. I feel a little bit mistrustful of people who want to quickly go talk about when it's okay to lie. Because I think it's a useful ethical exploration, and something certainly has its place in life to consider, you know, the outer edges of when maybe it's appropriate to lie. But for ordinary people like us to quickly to go to that kind of discussion in order to justify lying, it's too fast. It's too easy then to kind of imply, well, yes, there's all kinds of situations then where it's okay. I would suggest that for most of us, we're not living usually in these kind of extreme situations that ethicians like to point out. What would you do then? So let's be careful about it. So from the point of view of self-protecting oneself, which is and also from creating a basic kind of social harmony in society, the Buddha primarily talked about not lying as being important. It's kind of like the most basic aspect of ethics. And maybe it's the most maybe obvious or gross. Just don't lie. The Buddha had other teachings about what kind of speech to avoid. But the first principle for that kind of speech is, what is it that puts you on the path to liberation, to freedom? So liberation, liberating the heart, freeing the heart from all its attachments, bondage, restrictions, fears, that becomes the higher, that's a first principle in Buddhism, to free the heart from that kind of deep pain. So what is it that sets you on that path? What moves you in that direction? And for that, a higher degree of care around our ethics is needed than simply doing the basic stuff of protecting ourselves and basically creating, you know, some basic kind of good social, you know, harmony. In that context, so again, if you're interested in awakening, if you're interested in a path of awakening, then there are certain guidelines that will support and help that. If you're not interested in that, then, you know, maybe you're interested in something else. So the assumption is that you're interested in this particular approach to life. So in that context, with that motivation, then the Buddha said, he also said, don't lie. But he also said, don't engage in slanderous speech. Avoid slander, avoid harsh speech, avoid gossip, and avoid what is usually translated as idle speech. So slander is language that actually specifically is used to harm other people indirectly. To talk badly about someone so other people will think bad about them. Harsh speech is speech where it's just so unpleasant to listen to and hear. Using a lot of profanities, using a lot of maybe kind of angry, very angry tone in how we speak. It just feels really harsh and painful to be part of. It's not gentle or doesn't feel kind. Gossip might not have the intention to slander. But gossip is talking about a third party in such a way that it's so easy to spread rumors and misinformation about what's going on. And even saying good things about someone as in gossip is a little bit tricky because you don't really understand the full context of what's being said. So you might see someone at IMC who maybe is a really good practitioner and really a good, sincere person here, and really helpful around IMC. And so you go, maybe, you know, you're at work or someplace, and you run into someone, and it turns out you have that person, you know, that person in common. And you say, oh, I know that person. I know that person from IMC. The person is so good there, so devoted and helpful, and, you know, just, you know, it's very helpful in our that community there, and just seems like a really good person. That person you tell happens to know the person's parents, and the person's parents are really, you know, maybe we have some very conservative, uptight, religious point of view, where it's really upsetting for them to know that their child is hanging out with the Buddhists. And it seemed like a nice thing to have said. You're talking nicely about someone behind their back. It's kind of like gossip because you're talking about them, you know. But you don't. Do we know the chain of cause and effect and how it'll come back? Should we think about it? Is just, you know, should we be concerned about the wider impact of how information about individuals spreads out into society? I think we should be some care around that because it's so easy for the information to be misunderstood. We play the game of telephone and all that. So gossip, avoiding gossip. There's one Buddhist teacher I know, And now I'm doing the very thing he doesn't do. We'll call him Jane. who had, I don't know if it's still the case, but a long-term practice of not talking about someone else, a third party, if the third party wasn't in the room, wasn't present. And it's hard to do, but it's very interesting to try. And as we try and find how difficult it is, that very difficulty encourages us to look more deeply. Why do I want to do this? What motivates it? So like gossip, why do we gossip when we gossip? Why do we talk about third parties when we talk about third parties? Sometimes it's because it has a good energy to it, a good feeling. We've created a camaraderie feeling. Wow, we're in it together, wow. And I'm the one, I'm smart. You know, of course I wouldn't do that, right? That's the implication. You can't believe that guy Gil. You know, could you believe he goes Sunday morning? It's like going to church, right? It's a very important day and very important. All these people come and he wears blue jeans. Can you believe it? You know, gee, it's like doesn't show proper respect for the Dharma and for the teaching and for all of us. And that guy, you know, can you believe it? And so, you know, is that important information? And, you know, what motivates it, you know, can be for some people the sense of kind of delight of being in it and feeling, well, I would never do that. You know, why bother? So please don't go talk about my jeans anywhere. So, can we gossip about ourselves? So it's very hard, and maybe, you know, I don't follow that precept of not talking about other people, but I try to be careful about how I say it and what I say. And it's a difficult area because it seems like a lot of our communication sometimes is about other people. And so the care that we should have behind that. And then the idea of no idle speech. And one definition of this that I've heard is you don't speak in such a way that you bore others. Because sometimes so-called idle speech is a very nice way of making connections to other people, and so I think you would have a too high standard is maybe not really so helpful. But to talk about things idly for no purpose at all. You know, if you talk idly for a purpose, maybe it's not idle. If you're talking idly just to make a connection with someone, maybe it's not idle, but if it's for no purpose at all. So the basic, you know, Buddhist ethics then is no lying. But the guidelines for people who are on the path is a higher standard. And that standard is these four things. No slander, no harsh speech, no gossip, and no idle speech. So then the question around this is, how motivated are you to try to practice no slander, harsh speech, gossip, and idle speech? If someone simply comes to you, like I could have come today and sat down and said, today I'm going to talk about right speech. And you shouldn't lie, you shouldn't slander, you shouldn't speak harshly, you shouldn't gossip, and no idle speech. There. Let's go home. I made my point. That's not going to work very well. It's not going to go very far. It seems like maybe a good idea. But one of the things that are required in this is to be motivated to do this. Not just that it's a good idea, but to be motivated, this is a good idea. And that's why I started with this idea of first principle and first state, is that how motivated are you for the principle or the idea of following a path of liberation, of freedom? Is that mildly important to you? Is it not important at all? Is in the list of priorities of how you live your life, does it fit, right after you know, doing your laundry, you know, or does it fit after watching the 10 o'clock news, or does it fit after, you know, turning on NPR first thing in the morning, you know, where does it fit? Or does it fit, you know, is it more important than your work, than your livelihood, your job? What's most important for you? What motivates you the most? And it's certainly not my place to say where it should be, but it's my place as a teacher to point to you to question that, to look at that, to be mindful of that. What is it that motivates your life? What is it? What do you really want your life to be about? What's a central organizing principle or orientation or values that hold your life? And those central values then, how motivated are you, really? I've known people, sometimes I've seen it in myself, where internally it seems to me I'm really motivated. You know, this is really important for me. I'm dedicated, you know, to practice, Buddhism, awakening, freedom, compassion. These are really important values for me. But then if an anthropologist from Mars came to study me, you know, well, look at that. You know, couldn't see my mind, was going inside, but saw my behavior. Would they decide that that's most important? Well, there's some days maybe they wouldn't. Like last week, you know, we had the World Series on in my home. So if they dropped into my home Wednesday evening last week, actually I was here teaching, so I couldn't have, but I guess Monday evening, when was it? Wednesday evening? You know, we had the World Series on at home. And, well, this guy doesn't think that awakening is that important. He's watching the World Series. Actually, I was watching the World Series because to support or be connected to my son, my 10-year-old son, because he's just that's his religion. So it's not, you know, this higher level of ethics has a lot to do with what motivates us and how motivated we are. If we're motivated enough, then looking at these four areas of life is considered very, very helpful for following a path to liberation, to freedom. Doing the opposite of those things, to actually slander, gossip, use harsh speech, and to have idle speech, to actually do those, not only does not put us on the path to liberation, it actually, from the path of liberation's point of view, it moves you in the opposite direction. So, is that something that you want? It makes it harder to become liberated. So, it might be interesting for you, for this next week, to spend some time, maybe one day in each, considering more deeply the nature, impact, and motivations behind slander. Probably many of you say, well, I never slander. But, you know, look more carefully. Look really carefully. What's the nature? What can you learn more about harsh speech this next week? Study it in yourself, study it in others. What can you learn about gossip? And what can you learn about idle speech? It's four big topics, so maybe four different days. And then after those 4 days of studying, considering it, reflecting on it, journaling about it, perhaps you would find some friends or total strangers that you could talk to about it and say, oh, at my meditation center, we were encouraged to reflect and explore on these four topics. I wonder if I could talk to you about it a little bit. I wonder if you'd be interested. Because I think it's really helpful, not just to make it something private, but just to be shared with others. We learn about ourselves more, we recognize, we kind of explore it more. And then next week, we'll talk more about the positive side of the ethics of speech, so that not just what to be avoided, but what actually to pick up and to do. So words that heal, words that benefit, words that can improve everyone's lives. So we have 5 minutes, and now, if anyone dares speak... We could have some questions or comments or protests.
Two questions about gossip. One is, if I go and tell my friend who's never been to IMC, there is this teacher in IMC whose teachings and humor is great, I love going there. Is that gossip?
Hearsay.
I think that if it's really depends, but if it's really simple information, that there's a place IMC, I go there, and there's a teacher there, and I value that teacher. That's not gossip. You're not talking about me. It's talking about yourself more. However, it might be gossip if it might come out. I don't know if it's gossip, but it might have a deleterious effect, depending on who you tell it to. I can make it up, but if there's some religious fanatic who feels that there shouldn't be any Buddhism in Redwood City, and then you say there's a Buddhist center in Redwood City and I value it, then they might feel threatened, and then we get the protests on the sidewalks. So that probably wasn't good.
Now, how about the second question is, one common case I see in gossiping, whether it is about myself or others, is venting about something that somebody has done or said that has bothered you. So you're either seeking clarification by talking about it to someone else, or you're seeking solace. You're wondering whether you're taking it personally or that's just the way that person is. And if that's just the way that person is, then it eases the hardship and the pain on you. So what about that? How should one go about that?
It's a good question. There's not just venting, but there's also trying to understand something better, exploring it all. And sometimes we do that with friends. You know, this is a difficult situation in my life. I have difficulty with this person, and can we talk about it so I can understand better what's going on? And sometimes people feel like they have a need to vent, to get the energy or the emotions out, the anger out, and they just need to talk for a while. I think that one of the issues is what's the motivation? Is the motivation in speaking to cause harm to someone else, to slander someone? Is the motivation to gossip? If that's the case, then we should refrain. But if the motivation is to get to some clarity, to get some balance, and hopefully then be able to come back and talk to that, take care of that third party in a wiser way, then perhaps when you go to your friend and say, I need to talk, you say, first of all, you say, I need to vent. Please don't take too seriously what I'm telling you right now. I just need to kind of have some place to let this stuff go. Or you might say, I don't think I have the full perspective here. So I want to tell you my perspective of what happened and what I think is going on, but I don't really know yet. And one of the reasons I want to talk to you is I want to have a sounding board, someone to ask me questions and explore it with me, and maybe I can get into a better understanding. Please, you can beg your friend, please be careful before you agree with me. You know, I need you to kind of help me get a bigger picture here. So then you have a very different motivation. And also then you're preparing your friend so they don't think what you're saying is true. And then they can be more careful of what's going on. All the way in the outer hall.
How do you deal with the problem situation where these things can be in conflict? For instance, your desire not to lie might be in conflict with the desire not to spread gossip. If somebody asks you your opinion about somebody, for instance, and you feel that the person who's asking has a legitimate reason for caring or wanting to know for some reason, now, if you answer, you're spreading, you are gossiping in a sense, but you're also telling the truth. You know, there is a potential conflict, I would believe.
So perhaps we don't have time now, but having an example would be better. But I'm a great believer, as a default kind of, or first kind of approach to something like that, is to state your dilemma, your conflict, before you answer. Say, you know, oh, that's interesting you asked me that, but that puts me in a difficult situation. I don't know, I'm going to struggle. You know, my beliefs, my practice, my Buddhism, or whatever, makes me want to be very careful about talking about the third person. I don't want to lie. I don't want to, you know, I'm in a difficult situation right now. Could you restate the question? Or how can we go forward here in this conversation, given the fact that I'm struggling right now?
Well, I guess generically, I'm still thinking, if somebody wants information about a third person who isn't present, and you have this information, to what extent is it your responsibility just to withhold that information, or alternatively to give that information if it's being asked for? Does my question make sense?
I suppose so, but I think maybe I have to kind of think out all the situations. When is it appropriate when the immigration officer comes to your door and asks about your neighbor? Do you think your neighbor has a green card? And you say, oh, I think I'm late in making dinner for my family. Excuse me. No, you're not lying, but are we obligated to talk about the fact that our neighbor doesn't have a green card?
Well, I mean, a classic example is I'm a manager. I get phone call about an ex-employee asking for reference. You know, this employee was not very good. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want to gossip about them.
Well, you know, I think if you say, I'd rather not do recommendation, that says a lot. You know, so you're not really giving details, but... many years ago, 20 years ago, when I was applying for graduate school, one of my professors claimed, that there was an art to writing recommendations for graduate students or potential graduate students, because almost everyone would write good recommendations. But you had to kind of know how to read those recommendations. Mm-hmm. And if they were kind of like generically good, you don't take them too seriously, but you had to kind of really emphasize the specialness of the student to really get it across. So, you know, if you say, oh, you know...
Yeah.
He came to work every day. You know, it seemed fine. He said he means well. I don't know. There are ways of avoiding lying, you don't lie, but you also don't divulge that sometimes... You know, it leaves it to the listener to kind of sort through what actually is being said. And I think it's wise sometimes not to say anything at all. Say, I'd rather not say. So, I'm not suggesting here that these areas, especially with that these areas are easy. Because we're in this life that we live, we're often talking about each other in a variety of different ways and sorting out the impact and the motivation, and all this takes a while. Or maybe it takes a lifetime or never stops. It's not easy, but it's really worthwhile. And it's worthwhile for our community, it's worthwhile for taking care of ourselves, and it's really worthwhile if what you want to do is to set your heart at peace, at ease, and then live a life where your heart can express that deep potential for peace and compassion. It's really worthwhile. So explore it, and then next week we'll take it to the next level, unless politics intervenes.